In the U.S., home builder confidence has dropped to its lowest level in 17 months. The National Association of Home Builders says the confidence index dropped to 13 in August. This is the lowest level since March 2009. Home builders blame the decline on the expiration of a government tax incentive. The overall economy and the job market are also blamed. Purchases of existing homes declined 5.1% in June. Meanwhile, reports say banks are expected to claim back more than 1 million properties in 2010. This is due to the mounting number of foreclosures in the country.
The Palestinian Authority has criticized Israel's dismissal of the Middle East Quartet's call for direct peace talks. Press TV's Sari Al-Khalili has the details.
Israel has decided to reject the proposal by the Middle East Quartet for new direct peace talks between Israelis and the Palestinian Authority. Although the proposal has not been released yet, Israeli decision was an objection to the expected preconditions of the quartet. The latest statement released by the quartet last March stipulates that the current settlement freeze should continue. A Palestinian state is to be established along the pre-war 1967 borders, and the East Jerusalem al-Quds is to be recognized as the capital of the new state. The Palestinian Authority announced it would accept switching into direct negotiations if the new quartet statement reiterates the Israeli obligations.
We don't have any conditions. When we say stop settlement activities, including East Jerusalem, that's not a Palestinian condition. That's an Israeli obligation. When we say terms of reference provided for in the Madrid principles and Security Council resolutions and so on, two states and 67, this is not a Palestinian condition. This is an Israeli obligation.
The quartet is led by former British Prime Minister Tony Blair and consists of the US, the EU, Russia, and the UN. Although the PA leaders initially described the Israeli settlement freeze as meaningless, they are now saying if it ends while direct talks are being held, they will pull out of those talks. The freeze in new building activity expires on September 26.
The Israeli government has a choice now, settlements or peace. They can't have both.
Last week, U.S. Middle East Envoy George Mitchell met with both Israeli and Palestinian officials in a bid to push for direct talks.
The Americans are discussing with the both Palestinian side and the Israeli side the steps that are needed to launch the direct negotiations, including the opening ceremony and the place that the negotiations take place in, and other issues, which means that the Palestinians already accepted the negotiations by dropping their preconditions.
The Palestinian factions, including the Hamas movement in Gaza, called on acting PA chief Mahmoud Abbas to reject talks and not to bow to Israeli and U.S. pressure.
Israel's decision to reject the quartet's proposal came as Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu approved the erection of 23 new mobile classrooms for 600 students in 12 settlements, despite the freeze in new activity in the West Bank. Sari Al-Khalili, Press TV, Ramallah.
Turkey has played down reports of U.S. pressure on Ankara to review its positions on Israel and Iran. A senior Turkish foreign ministry official says, quote, Turkey has been hearing the same thing from U.S. officials at every level. On Monday, U.S. President Barack Obama said Turkey must change its stance on Israel and Iran if it wants an arms deal to go through. The U.S. criticizes Turkey for voting against the UN in June. Washington has also called on Ankara to cool down its rhetoric about Israel's attack on a Gaza-bound aid flotilla. The attack, which happened in May, left 9 Turkish peace activists dead.
The Afghan President Hamid Karzai has given a 4-month deadline to all private security firms to leave his country. This as the U.S. says it prefers a gradual withdrawal of private security firms. Press TV's Faiz Khurshid has more.
The Afghanistan's President Hamid Karzai has set a 4-month deadline for all 52 private security companies to end their operations in his country. Many of them are foreign, but some of the bigger ones are also Afghan-owned. They employ an estimated 30,000 to 40,000 armed personnel. Karzai has often complained that they duplicate the duties of the Afghan security forces and divert resources needed to train the army and police.
All private security firms will stop operations within the next 4 months. We are determined to dissolve these firms, and further details will come soon.
But the timeline set by President Karzai has not been supported by the U.S. and NATO commanders. They say dissolving such firms would not be practical or possible until an alternative force was ready to take over or the security situation in Afghanistan was satisfactory.
This will happen over time as Afghan security forces take over the necessary work that private security companies were hired to do.
Private security companies were created after the US-led invasion of 2001 to fill a vacuum created by a lack of adequately trained police in army forces. They look after foreign embassies, escort UN and NATO supply convoys, and protect VIPs. But they are blamed for importing and exporting weapons and maintaining close ties with drug traffickers. And people criticize them as overbearing and abusive, notably on the country's roads. The call to ban these companies came a week after a convoy of DynCorp private security company that is operating in Afghanistan under U.S. State Department contract was involved in a car accident that killed 4 Afghan civilians in Kabul. The accident sparked rioting and anti-American protests. There are also other security companies that are responsible for civilian deaths in Afghanistan. Blackwater is one of them. In May 2009, the Blackwater guards opened fire on a car in Kabul for no reason, killing 2 Afghan civilians. The deaths of these 2 civilians sparked a nationwide anger at that time.
The government wants to entrust the tasks of private security firms to the army. It can prove a challenge for Afghan security forces, as many here say they look good in terms of numbers, but when it comes to efficiency, capability and equipment, they leave a lot to be desired. Faiz Khurshid, Press TV, Kabul.
Disagreements and contradictory remarks among top U.S. military figures regarding the war in Afghanistan. Defense Secretary Robert Gates and his top commander in Afghanistan differ on an exact time for troop withdrawal from the war-torn country.
Well, this is while the White House in its latest announcement has said the July 2011 deadline is non-negotiable, adding to the contradictions.
Robert Gates says the U.S. troops will start to pull out on schedule in July 2011. He believes NATO can even begin transferring some security duties to Afghan forces as early as next spring.
Very clear.
This is why the U.S. commander in Afghanistan, General David Petraeus, seems to be at odds with the Defense Secretary. Petraeus has told the media that he reserved the right to advise President Barack Obama against a troop withdrawal. He says the troop pullout is a process, not a single event, and it is condition-based. The uncertainty and lack of coherent decision-making in Washington is prevailing as a death toll for international troops in the 9-year-long war passes the 2,000 mark. President Barack Obama has been largely criticized for not withdrawing troops fast enough in what many believe is an unwinnable war.
The United States never tried to understand the basic of the country, how the system, the tribal system works. It never read the history of Afghanistan, that no power can win in this country by the means of military and army. And by them listening to the generals in military for 9 years, and the military keep telling them that this war can be won by bombs and bullets, that's why they could not win this war, or they could not, you know, finish this war in 9 years. And if they keep listening to the generals on the ground, this war will continue for many years, and they will achieve nothing.
U.S. public support for the war and Obama's handling of it are now at an all-time low. Meanwhile, rising casualties among the Afghan civilians has gone from outcries to outrage among the Afghan people and within the government. During a recent speech, President Hamid Karzai lashed out at foreign interference and called for a ban on the private security firms operating in the country. Karzai is to give the companies 4 months to pack up and leave. The decision will include both international and Afghan private security firms. The Afghan president says no Afghan administration could be successful unless it gets rid of foreign advisers and replaces them with Afghans. He believes that Afghans have the potential to take it from here and govern themselves.
I think President Karzai is a little bit late dissolving private security firms after 9 years, because they sacked lots of money and funds from the the money that was channeled to Afghanistan. I think I'm not sure if Karzai is serious enough to try to get rid of, or his government will be capable of getting rid of these security firms.
The recent superflood, which has devastated Pakistan, has affected around 20 million. Pakistan's northwest bore the initial brunt of the torrents, in particular the city of Nowshera, lying on the banks of the River Kabul. Tens of thousands were evacuated before the River Kabul burst its banks, submerging various parts of the city. Now, with the water receding, locals slowly return to salvage what they can from the carnage.
The flood came early in the morning, destroying our entire village. Fortunately, we had already left. We have not received any assistance from the government, but the UNHCR have at least provided us with tents. Many who have lost their ID cards cannot get tents and are living under the open skies.
I had to move all 10 members of my family just before the flood hit our village. We took whatever we could carry. Now we have no home, lost all our possessions, and still have not received any help from the government. Our lives have been destroyed.
The United Nations had previously said that the region's worst flooding in 80 years had affected 14 million out of Pakistan's 180 million population. Tens of thousands of buildings and homes have been destroyed, with thousands of acres of crops swept away. The muddied landscape bears the grim scars from the torrential onslaught, and the smell of decaying animals lingers in the air. The United Nations spokesman has said up to 3.5 million children are at risk from deadly waterborne diseases in Pakistan following the country's floods.
Mother Nature indeed works in mysterious ways. Over 10,000 homes have been destroyed in this particular area of Nowshera in the northwest of Pakistan. And amazingly, the only building which managed to escape the wrath of the superflood was this mosque behind me.
2 weeks on from the superflood, the receding water begins to unveil the tale of destruction. The local graveyard wears a grey look of anarchy caused by the torrents.
No one warned us that the flood was coming. You can see the damage to the cloth market behind me. No one is here to help us or address our damages. 5 of my shops are flooded with mud and all my stock has been destroyed. We can rely only on Almighty now for help. My losses run into millions of rupees. Who will compensate me?
As the water levels begin to recede from the superflood, life is slowly returning to the city of Nowshera. The rehabilitation of the affected people and the reconstruction of damaged buildings could take months and is estimated to cost billions of rupees. Adil Sabir, Press TV, Nowshera, in the northwest of Pakistan.
Pulsing with Pakistan now, protesters have gathered to vent their frustration with tough conditions after weeks of heavy flooding. Protesters blocked a highway outside Sukkur, a major town in the southern province of Sindh. Burning straw and waving sticks, they demanded urgent help from the government. This comes as the UN says only a quarter of the nearly $460 million in aid needed for initial relief has arrived in Pakistan. Weeks of flooding has killed up to 1,600 Pakistanis and made 2 million others homeless.